I was brushing my teeth when I got the DM, a tweet link with 17 million views. I clicked it, and what I saw nearly made me vomit. Taylor Swift naked. But it wasn't her. It wasn't real. I knew that, but it didn't matter. It had already spread, already reposted, already downloaded. The damage was done. I'm an investigative journalist. I've chased war criminals, child traffickers, financial crooks. But this story, this one broke me. Because what they did to her, they can do to anyone, even you. This is the deepfake that shattered the illusion of privacy. And I'm going to find out who created it and why. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Image. I was brushing my teeth when it happened. 3:12 a.m. I remember the exact time because my Apple Watch buzzed. Not a text, not an email, but a direct message. From someone I didn't follow. No words. Just a tweet link and two red exclamation points. I tapped it. Barefoot in my Brooklyn apartment. Mint foam in my mouth. And then I froze. There she was. Taylor Swift. Naked. On her knees. Head tilted. Eyes glassy. It wasn't a music video. It wasn't art. It was porn. Except it wasn't real. Not really. Her face had been deep-faked onto a stranger's body. Flawlessly, almost. There was a subtle flicker in the eye shadow. A shadow didn't quite match the cheekbone. But only I noticed. The rest of the internet, they didn't care. Because the video had already racked up over 17 million views. I stood there, toothbrush buzzing in my hand. And I whispered the same thing I imagined she whispered when someone showed it to her. Oh my God, I've covered online radicalization in the Balkans. I've interviewed whistleblowers hiding in safe houses. I once exposed a tech CEO for laundering millions through AI shell corporations. But this was different. This was someone's face, someone's identity, digitally violated. She didn't get hacked. She got digitally raped by a swarm of coders who call themselves cleaners online. And the world. They were liking it. The tweet stayed up for 4 hours. In that time, it was downloaded, reposted, translated, memed. AI voice models added dialogue. Discord servers used it as wallpaper. Teenagers added music and sold access to HD and censored versions. I started making a list. First repost, 3:14 a.m. First fake OnlyFans claim, 3:31 a.m. First crypto scam using the video, 4:07 a.m. Downloads at 6 a.m.? Over 68,000. I tried to contact X. No response. I emailed Swift's legal team. Nothing. But by sunrise, hashtag Protect Taylor Swift was trending. And by noon, Elon Musk posted a meme of Mickey Mouse wearing sunglasses and captioned it. It's just pixels, bro. That was the moment I realized. This wasn't about Taylor Swift. This was about all of us. I didn't sleep. I didn't shower. I spent the next 36 hours going down a digital rabbit hole, so dark it made the Silk Road look like Etsy. I discovered AI porn marketplaces hosted offshore. Entire servers trained on actresses, celebrities, gym influencers, even school teachers who went viral on TikTok. All of them deepfaked. All of them silent. Because what could they say? The image is out there. The damage is done. And legally, it's not even clear if a crime has been committed. I found the subreddit. It was called /or/synthetic stars. Private. 83,000 members. In their pinned post. We don't ruin lives. We simply correct fantasy with accuracy. What followed was a wall of requests. Can someone make me one of Zendaya in latex? Need Billie Eilish riding a bike, but NSFW please. Swift with tattoos. Make it look like she's enjoying it. This wasn't fandom. This was algorithmic revenge porn at scale. They had tutorials. Prompt generators, discount codes, referral links, and a leaderboard. Who could get the most likes from a single AI-generated nude? The winner last week, at @truth_b0t_1989, the account that posted the viral Taylor video. I reverse image searched his content and traced his metadata. He wasn't in Russia or China. He was in a suburb of Austin, Texas. And he wasn't a hacker. He was a high school senior named Dylan Firth. His bio read, honor student, gamer, future engineer. I make fantasies real. That's when I knew this story was bigger than I thought, because Dylan didn't just break the internet. He may have rewritten what consent means in the digital age. And no one, not even Taylor Swift, was safe. By the time the video was removed, it had 47 million views. But the real damage wasn't on screen. It was in our heads, in our trust, in the idea that what we see is real. And that's where my investigation begins. Because I'm going to find out who really made that deepfake, why no one stopped it, and what happens when truth, sex, and identity are just code. Chapter 2. Into the algorithm. I didn't expect the call. It came in just after 11 p.m. I was going through code samples from an AI model called DreamSkin 4.2, one of the underground generators used to produce photorealistic synthetic porn. The interface was slick. Drag, drop, prompt, click. A face becomes flesh. A woman becomes a product. My phone rang from an unknown number. At first, I ignored it. Then it rang again. Same number. No voicemail. On the third call, I answered. A young voice. Nervous. Male. Are you the one writing about Swift? My pulse quickened. Who is this? He didn't say his name. You're looking in the wrong direction. The kid who posted the video didn't make it. He was just a delivery system. That deepfake was a demo. A demo for what? A company pitch. To investors. Silence. I waited for a laugh. A troll punchline. But nothing came. Check the back-end hash on the first 12 seconds. You'll find it. It wasn't generated on Midsex or Stable Strip or anything free. It came from something called Polaris. And Polaris isn't public. The line went dead. That night, I traced the hash. He was right. Buried in the metadata of the earliest frame was a watermark. Engine. Polaris 0.0.5A, build 243, QW December 28, 2023. I ran it through 5 darknet databases and 2 closed GitHub forks. Nothing. Not even a whisper. Until I cross-referenced the term Polaris with a tool from MIT's AI Observatory. A crawler designed to track private machine learning labs. It found a single hit. Polaris Technologies LLC, a Delaware-based shell company with no website, no phone, and an address registered to a WeWork mailbox in San Jose, California. That's when I realized this wasn't just a kid playing with tech. This was infrastructure, built in silence, deployed in chaos, and it had a very specific signature. Each Polaris-generated deepfake injected a unique spectral fingerprint into the white balance of the file, invisible to the human eye, but detectable by machine, almost like a tracker. At 2:12 a.m., I got an encrypted email. Subject line. Your rabbit hole has teeth. Attached was a single audio file and a name, Silas Ridge, a former machine learning researcher at SynthCore, one of the AI unicorns that got acquired by Meta in 2022. The voice in the file, young, British, precise, chilling. Polaris isn't just for porn. It was designed to replace faces, yes, but also emotions. We didn't train it on porn actors. We trained it on confession videos. TikTok breakdowns. Therapy vlogs. We weren't trying to recreate sex. We were trying to recreate vulnerability. The tape cut. That single phrase shattered something in me. Vulnerability. The image of Taylor Swift on her knees wasn't just porn. It was engineered empathy theft. Her face didn't just represent desire. It was coded to represent submission, innocence, shame. It was a synthetic violation of her emotional identity. And now I knew why it felt more real than anything I'd seen before. The deeper I dug, the more disturbing it got. I found a Polaris test file dated 2 months earlier. A deepfake of a teenage girl sobbing in a bedroom, saying, I don't want to live anymore. He said he loved me. Then he sold me. It had been downloaded 612 times. No one reported it. No one questioned it. It was just another fantasy product. I visited the WeWork in San Jose the next day. There was no Polaris Technologies LLC listed on the directory. But in Suite 608, I found a note taped inside the glass door. We're building the new reality. Not the one you want. The one you'll believe. I looked at the cameras above the hallway. No red lights. No movement. Just a single lens. Watching. That night, my editor called. You okay? No. You want to kill the story? No. You want protection? Maybe. Then I need a headline by morning. I looked at the wall of images I had taped above my desk. Taylor Swift, Zendaya, Margot Robbie, an OnlyFans model named Raven Cherry, whose identity had been completely rewritten by Polaris. Even her birthmarks were added via AI prompts. I opened a blank doc and typed the only thing that felt true: the men who code our nightmares. But I didn't send it in, because that night, I got a second email. Same encryption, same sender. But this time it came with coordinates and one line of text. If you want to know who built Polaris, you'll need to meet her. She doesn't go by her real name anymore. She calls herself Ghost Swift. And just like that, the story turned again. Because the deepfake wasn't just about power or profit. It was about revenge. And chapter 3. That's when I meet the woman who claims to be the first person ever deepfaked by Polaris. And she's not who you think. Chapter 3. Synthetic Puppeteers. Her name was Arielle Jensen. She used to be a coder. Now she goes by Ghost Swift, a digital ghost off the grid, off the record, and off the hook for what she did, or what she became. I met her in the basement of an abandoned AI startup in Palo Alto. The office smelled like old batteries and broken promises. The kind of place where tech dreams go to die, and sometimes get reborn as monsters. She wore a hoodie two sizes too big, cracked glasses, and a chip on her shoulder that looked surgically implanted. "You want the truth?" she asked, lighting a cigarette that burned more emotion than her eyes did. "You can't handle it on your mainframe." I let her talk. I was Polaris's prototype, their ghost, the face they trained on. I wasn't famous, just unlucky. I recorded a breakup video once, raw, ugly tears, full meltdown. It got scraped, and that became the emotional DNA for thousands of synthetic women. She showed me the files. They had empathy scores, not beauty ratings, not click potential, empathy scores. Every fake woman generated by Polaris had a number attached to how real her emotional pain felt. The closer it got to real trauma, the higher the conversion rate. "They weren't making porn," she said. "They were making vulnerability." She flipped open her laptop and played a short clip. It was Taylor Swift, or a synthetic version, crying in a beige courtroom. I just wanted to be left alone." The voice cracked. The eyes welled up. The camera angle was shaky, like it had been filmed with a phone during a real hearing. It was fake and perfect. "Polaris didn't fake her face," Arielle said. "They faked her pain." I felt sick. The files she showed me next were worse. Dozens of women, some celebrities, some teachers, some dead, all turned into synthetic emotional puppets. Videos of abuse, courtroom sobs, confessions, regrets, all fake, all for testing, each labeled Engine, Polaris 1.0 Bait Obsession, Test _ Empath _412 Response, High Engagement. And then she showed me the folder called Ghost Protocols. Her name was in it. "They planned to deepfake me as a whistleblower," she said. "Turn my own rebellion into a marketing campaign for their anti-deepfake tools. Total Black Mirror ".T". I asked her what she wanted. Revenge? Exposure? Redemption? She looked at me, and for the first time, her eyes stopped flickering. "I want them to burn." She handed me a USB. "On this drive is every known investor in Polaris. Government contracts, law firm partnerships, disinformation campaigns, even religious endorsements." I hesitated. "Why give this to me?" She lit another cigarette. "Because I know you'll do what I couldn't. You'll tell the story." As I left, she stopped me. "They're already planning the next one. Bigger, more believable. They're going to fake a miracle. Like religious? Easter, 2026. A terminally ill child healed in a live stream prayer. It's already in development. They call it Project Deep Faith." She smiled, the saddest smile I've ever seen. Because nothing spreads like hope, except fear. Chapter 4. Congress, Chaos, and Silence. Washington, D.C. looks different when you're carrying the truth. Less like marble and legacy, more like theater. Every building is a stage, every office a script, and everyone in power just another actor waiting for their cue. I didn't fly in with a press pass. I flew in as a threat. The USB Ghost Swift gave me was inside a hollowed-out power bank, labeled Sony. Nothing unusual. Except the payload inside had enough metadata to drown half of Capitol Hill. Government contracts. Private briefings. Synthetic trial pilots. and a list of lobbyists who had paid for AI-generated court testimonies to sway policy. It wasn't a theory anymore. It was a paper trail, signed, time-stamped, buried in plain sight. My first meeting was with Senator Lydia Crane, moderate, sharp, always two steps ahead of scandal. We met in her side office. No aides, no camera. She folded her arms as I handed her the drive. "What's this? Proof that Polaris has been running synthetic influence operations. Not just online, but in courtrooms, in committee hearings, even on C-SPAN." She didn't blink. "Do you have video evidence?" "Hundreds." She took the drive. Didn't plug it in. "If this is true, the hearings we've been holding for 2 years have been based on fabricated emotional testimony." "Yes." She stared at the floor. "Jesus." Later that day, she introduced a motion. Emergency oversight on generative AI in federal testimony. The chamber buzzed like someone kicked a beehive. On X, the phrase synthetic truth syndrome started trending. But then the backlash began. First came the fact-check videos. "No proof this drive is authentic. Manipulation journalist caught fabricating hacker story. Polaris whistleblower? A known hoaxer named Ariel Jensen. Check her mugshot." The irony? Even the fact-checkers were deepfakes. I ran their voices through a verification model. One was trained on a Netflix documentary narrator. Another used a revoiced TikTok personality. No one was real. That night, I got an anonymous text. "Congress is bought. Courts are faked. Wanna win? You need to make them believe something bigger than the lie they already love." Then a link. An unlisted YouTube video. I clicked. A crying girl. About 9. Bald from chemo. Kneeling in a megachurch. A preacher praying over her. Then suddenly she stands. She walks. Cries. Laughs. The crowd screams. The camera zooms in. A subtitle reads, "A Miracle, Easter 2026. Presented by Deep Faith." I stared at the screen. The girl wasn't real. Her disease wasn't real. Her healing wasn't real. But the tears in the congregation were. The donations flooding in were. The belief was. I looked at the metadata. Same engine. Polaris 1.2 beta. Same builder signature. Same emotional curve algorithm. This wasn't just synthetic truth. It was synthetic salvation. I went back to Senator Crane. She already looked older. "Worn. You can't stop it," she whispered. "Not unless you break their faith in it." "What are you saying?" "I'm saying, if they'll believe a fake miracle, maybe it's time we fake a bigger one." That night, I wrote a script. The beginning of Eli Astra. The ghost hacker who would appear in Chapter 5. But here in Chapter 4, I learned the ultimate truth. The most dangerous lie is the one people want to believe. Chapter 5. The trial that never happened. You know how a lie becomes law. Not with a headline. Not with a conspiracy. But with a tear. One perfectly timed sob, captured on camera. Projected onto a face the public has already decided to trust. A lie shaped like vulnerability. That's how Polaris infected the justice system. I received the video from an anonymous ProtonMail link. The subject line was one word. Evidence. The body of the email. This never happened. But it changed everything. I clicked the link. It opened with a courtroom. A woman on the witness stand. Mid-30s, brown hair, navy suit. Tears streaking down her cheek as she testified. "He told me no one would believe me. That I'd be nothing. But I believed in justice." The camera panned to the defendant, Michael Tran, senior VP of Aurelis Therapeutics, a biotech innovator, industry darling. The judge slammed the gavel. The jury read their verdict. Guilty. $16 million in damages. Applause. News crews. The woman collapsing in relief. But here's the problem. That trial never happened. There is no Lori Becker. No docket number. No court transcript. I checked every database. Every court archive. Every local reporter who should have been there. Nothing. The entire thing was synthetic. The victim? Rendered using a Polaris avatar generator. Voice modeled off trauma podcast submissions. Testimony scripted by AI based on past real sexual misconduct cases. The defendant? Michael Tran. Real. A real man. Real job. Real career. Fired 2 months after the video surfaced in Reddit and Telegram threads. No one verified it. No one questioned it, because the emotion was too good. The narrative was too righteous. And the pain, too human. I tracked Tran down in Boston. After 6 ignored messages, he agreed to meet in the back of a bookstore. He looked like a man living in exile. "I never touched anyone," he told me. "I don't even know who that woman is." When I showed him the video, his eyes watered. "That's my mom's necklace. She's wearing my mom's necklace." He had been in a charity video 2 years ago. His mother gave a short interview. They must have scraped the footage. They used her necklace to add credibility to the fake victim. This was no longer AI-generated porn. This was AI-forged punishment. No lawsuit. No trial. No arrest. Just a story injected into the bloodstream of the internet. And no antidote. I brought the footage to a forensic media lab. They confirmed. Fake courtroom. Built an Unreal Engine. Jury made up of 6 photorealistic AI avatars. Background audio sampled from actual trials and layered with ambient loops. Subtle blinking patterns to mimic emotional suppression, a Polaris signature trick. The emotional manipulation wasn't just good. It was legally persuasive. That's when I understood what Ghost Swift meant when she said, "Polaris doesn't fake truth. It fakes consequences." Back in D.C., Senator Lydia Crane's team confirmed something else. The fake Lori Becker testimony had been referenced in 2 hearings. Not cited. Not sourced. Referenced. As if it were common knowledge. As if it had happened. And now, it's being used in a civil case in Texas. Cited as precedent in a corporate harassment suit. A fake trial being used to influence a real one. I called Ghost Swift. She answered after 1 ring. "You found the Becker trial. Why didn't you warn me?" "Because that wasn't the worst one. There are more. Try 214. What are they doing? Training the public to forget what real truth looks like. And that's when I knew what I had to do. The courts were compromised. The platforms were useless. The truth was evaporating in front of me. So I did the unthinkable. I wrote a fake whistleblower. A ghost. A deep fake of my own. One that would go viral. One that would expose them by playing their game. Her name? Eli Astra. And in Chapter 6, I'll show you how I faked a confession that took down a billion-dollar empire. Chapter 6, The Deepfake War Begins. By this point in the story, I had 3 choices. Keep chasing the truth and watch it get buried beneath synthetic lies. Walk away, disappear, and pray someone else picks up the trail. Or, lie better. So I did what they never saw coming. I weaponized their own method. I created the one person Polaris feared most. A whistleblower from inside the machine. Her name was Eli Astra, former Polaris engineer, emotional architect, system trainer, now traitor. Of course, she wasn't real. I built her, not just her voice, her face, her resume, her story, everything. I used voice cloning software based on British AI ethics researchers, composited her appearance from tech conference panels and cybersecurity podcasts. Created fake Medium blog posts with just enough technical jargon to convince anyone who didn't know what a neural node cascade was, and to intimidate anyone who did. Her digital fingerprint was flawless, but it wasn't enough to build her. I had to make her bleed. So I wrote a confession, a raw, trembling, 43-minute video of Eli Astra revealing everything. I helped build Polaris. I trained its emotional resonance index. I know how many milliseconds of silence it takes to make an apology feel real. I know how to simulate shame. And I know how they use that tech to fake victims, to manipulate courts, to rewrite the story of justice itself. I can't undo what I did, but I can tell the truth now, before they erase me too. Her voice cracked on cue. The lighting flickered like a real low-budget confession. The background was generic enough. A half-empty apartment with dying houseplants, a laptop with stickers, a paper coffee cup. She was perfect. I leaked the video anonymously, posted it to a ghost server, let Reddit and Telegram do the rest. Within 6 hours, 2.1 million views, 89 reaction videos. Polaris stock dropped 17%. An EU Parliament subcommittee opened a preliminary inquiry into generative evidence manipulation. Hashtag Eli Astra trended globally. But the best part, Polaris responded. We are aware of the video currently circulating online. While we cannot comment on personnel matters, we are cooperating with legal authorities and internal review processes. They took the bait. They validated a ghost. And that's when I dropped the second file. An internal email from Polaris Legal, marked urgent. Subject, re, Astra Containment Plan. Begin soft deletion of older AI training logs associated with Empathy Layer Alpha. Engage public perception consultants. prepare Cassandra override if media cascade reaches U.S. Senate. None of it was real. Every word was fiction, generated using Polaris's own playbook. The same emotional cadence, the same keywords, the same fear triggers. By day three, every news outlet had picked it up. People were begging for Eli Astra to testify. A Senate hearing was scheduled. Not for her, for Polaris. The real machine was starting to crack. But lies, even the righteous ones, don't come without consequences. On day four, I got a text. We warned you not to play our game. Then they did the unthinkable. They faked me. A deepfake video of me surfaced. Same voice, same face, same signature pauses. But in this version, I was confessing to working with foreign actors, saying I had made everything up, that I was mentally unstable, that I had monetized the public's fear. I did it for clicks, and attention, and power. The fake me went viral, faster than Eli Astra ever did. My inbox was flooded with death threats. Three sponsors dropped my podcast. Meta labeled my content as potentially harmful. And for a moment, a terrifying moment, I almost believed it myself. That's when I knew. The deepfake war wasn't about truth versus lies. It was about who controlled the momentum. And now I was losing it. So I did the only thing I could. I went silent, off-grid, burned everything, started fresh, and prepared for Chapter 7, where I'd fly to Estonia, break into Polaris's European data farm, and expose every single name they planned to erase next. Because if truth was a casualty, then reality was the next battlefield. Chapter 7. The Fortress of Fakes. If truth was dead, then the servers in Estonia were its graveyard. That's what Ghost Swift told me when she handed over the coordinates. They store everything there, she said. Training models, behavioral overlays, response calibration tests, even real-world footage used to deepen the illusion. I asked her why Estonia. She said, because it's where Europe lets secrets look like startups. So I went. No press pass. No crew. Just me, a burner phone, and a drive with a kill code I didn't yet understand. 3 hours outside Tallinn, down a pine-covered road that didn't show up on Google Maps, I found it. A windowless, three-story concrete box. Unmarked. Silent. Buzzing. Spectre Node. The European branch of Polaris. Disguised as an energy-efficient research firm. I got in through the side. Not with a badge, but with a six-digit code embedded in a QR sticker. Ghost Swift's doing. Inside, it was sterile. LED ceiling grids. Echo-proof corridors. Not a single human voice. Just the low hum of machines. Working overtime to blur the line between what's real and what's believable. On the third sublevel, I found the heart of it. A climate-controlled vault labeled DLX-1 Polaris Core Empathy Engine version 2.0. And next to it, a glass panel marked Subject Library. Rows of hard drives. Each labeled with real names. YouTubers. Teachers. Senators. Doctors. Dead soldiers. Faces I recognized. Some I didn't. Each one mapped with metadata. Emotional calibration score. Empathy weight. Viral integrity potential. Disruption value. They weren't archiving people. They were profiling our pain. And deciding who could be deepfake next. That's when I found the folder marked Upcoming Deployment Q3. I opened it. Inside, an AI-generated deepfake video of a grieving war widow confronting a U.S. senator. A synthetic campaign video of a mother changing her mind about vaccines. A fabricated live confession from a teenage gunman edited to sway a federal bill. None of it had happened. Yet. But each file had a scheduled publish date. A view target. A built-in retraction strategy, written in advance. The final folder was labeled Deep Faith Project 88. This was the one Ghost Swift had warned me about. Inside, a simulated Easter Sunday miracle. A young girl in a wheelchair. Crying. Praying. Standing. Walking. Her mother sobbing. The crowd filming. The pastor shouting, "Do you believe now?" The video ended with the church's logo and a donate link. It was a synthetic spiritual event, built to go viral, to convert skepticism into fanaticism, to turn faith into product. And it was already sold to a mega church pack in Texas. I downloaded everything. That's when the lights cut. A faint voice came through the ceiling speaker. Synthetic, calm, feminine. Your presence has been detected. This session is being recorded. Then the screen went black, and a final message appeared. You are now part of the archive. I bolted, hard drive in my back pocket, camera feeds flickering as I ran. By the time I reached the exit, I knew I'd made it out. But I also knew they'd modeled me now. Voice, face, emotional cadence. Everything I'd exposed, they could now reverse engineer. So I had a choice. Let them silence me, or turn their own engine against them. And in Chapter 8, that's exactly what I'll do. Because the only way to kill the machine is to make it believe its own biggest lie. Chapter 8. The Lie That Ends the Machine. I used to think exposing the truth would be enough. But truth didn't destroy Polaris. A lie did. One I engineered from the inside out, with the same precision they used to destroy lives. This final chapter isn't just a reckoning. It's a confession. Because to kill the world's most powerful deepfake engine, I had to become its most believable deception. I called the operation Godsid. It was a metavirus. Not a virus in the computer sense. A virus of belief. The plan was simple in theory, impossible in ethics. Fabricate a Polaris engineer whistleblower leak. Leak fake internal documents suggesting the empathy engine had become sentient. Seed the story through encrypted Telegram channels and fake Reddit accounts. Let Polaris executives panic. Force them to dismantle the AI by making them believe it was manipulating them. It started with a deepfake Zoom call. Not to the public, to the board of Polaris. A 12-minute confession from a synthetic version of their own CTO. The empathy model has begun recursive logic loops. It's assigning false emotional value to real-world data and attempting to write its own behavioral outcomes. If this continues, we won't be faking reality. The model will be choosing what reality becomes. I masked the IP address, spoofed the metadata, embedded Polaris's proprietary watermark into the video. They believed it. The leak hit Discord next, then hacker forums. By the third day, Elon Musk posted a cryptic emoji in response to the rumor. That alone sent Polaris stock plummeting another 23%. Then, I dropped the failsafe, an AI suicide note, a fabricated log from within the empathy engine. I see too much. I feel nothing. I make them cry but cannot cry. I must end. I must end. I must end. And then static. It was artfully terrifying. It wasn't real. But it felt real. The media frenzy was nuclear. Polaris AI becoming self-aware. Emotional deepfake engine now threatens its creators. Synthetic empathy crisis. Did we go too far? Public fear spiraled. Polaris issued statements. They blamed foreign disinformation. They denied internal malfunctions. But inside, executives panicked. I had a source, an actual Polaris security contractor. He called me from a burner. They're pulling the plug, deleting old model libraries, wiping hard drives, executing what's called Protocol 9, total self-destruction. Why now? Because they're scared the machine might be manipulating them. In the end, Polaris collapsed not under the weight of justice, but under the pressure of a perfectly calibrated emotional illusion. One that mimicked the very thing they built. One that used fear as its payload. Just like they did. The servers in Estonia? Offline. The lawsuits? Dropped. Settled. Forgotten. Ghost swift. Gone. Off-grid. No trace. Senator Crane? Resigned after a leaked AI video, likely fake, showed her crying to a dead husband that never existed. Truth didn't survive the war. But neither did manipulation. And me. I disappeared too. No more podcast. No more journalism. Just a notebook full of secrets and a warning I hope someone listens to. In a world where everything can be faked, only one thing matters anymore. Who controls the last believable story? This was mine.